On the Powers That Be podcast, we examine the players and currents behind today's most consequential decisions. Join us, listen to the Powers That Be, wherever you get your podcasts.
Not exactly sure what the official NFL account on Twitter is doing. Announcing award recipients before the NFL honors even start on TV. They announced Jaden Daniels had won Offensive Rookie of the Year, and the NFL's official Twitter account, at NFL, has announced that Ben Johnson has won the Assistant Coach of the Year.
I mean, look, it's going to get out anyway, so they might as well be the first on Twitter to put it out, you know? It's like the NFL draft. Like, you can announce it on TV, but just read Twitter and you get it several minutes ahead of time.
It's a fair point, but it's like, I mean, people are watching on TV so that they can see who wins. They don't want to, I mean, I don't know. It just seems kind of strange to me. People in the text line still talking about Eli Manning. Name one other quarterback that won two Super Bowls that isn't or won't be in the Hall of Fame. I think for the simple fact that Eli is the reason Tom Brady doesn't have nine rings that he should be in the Hall of Fame.
I mean, that is a solid point.
There's something
That's
to be said
for that.
Solid
point.
For quarterbacks that won two Super Bowls that aren't in the Hall of Fame, Jim Plunkett. I said that in the last hour. Jim Plunkett's not in the Hall of Fame. He won two Super Bowls with the Raiders. I don't know. So I think there's something to be said for that. But you're right. I mean, for the most part, guys that have won two Super Bowls or more in their careers, for the most part, are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Probably Brady, also because they're better quarterbacks.
Yeah, so Brady, his brother Peyton Manning, Joe Montana. Of course, Mahomes is going to be a Hall of Famer, no doubt. He could retire today and be a first ballot Hall of Famer, although we are all anxiously hoping that doesn't happen.
Don't you put that juju out there.
John Elway won two Super Bowls. He's in the Hall. Terry Bradshaw won four. He's in the Hall. Staubach won two. He's in the Hall. Bart Starr won two. He's in. Aikman won two. He's in. Ben Roethlisberger won a pair of Super Bowls. Is Big Ben in the Hall? Is he eligible for the Pro Football Hall of Fame yet?
I don't believe he's eligible yet.
Okay. I think he probably gets in. I don't know.
I mean, if Eli does, Eli belongs nowhere on that list with any of those quarterbacks, even Ben.
Right, but yeah, exactly. Roethlisberger has a career record of 165-81, 418 touchdowns to 211 picks, more touchdowns, less picks, more wins, less losses, more Pro Bowls with six. He was Offensive Rookie of the Year one time in his career. It never was an Offensive Player of the Year or an AP or a All-Pro or was never an MVP candidate, but
I think most that watch football would say that he was pretty elite at his position in his heyday, though. You know?
Would have to agree entirely. Bob Greasy won two Super Bowls. He's not in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I don't know. I think that Eli Manning is closer to Plunkett or Bob Greasy than he is to John Elway or Ben Roethlisberger.
I concur.
But for the sake of the fact that he won nine, you know, he prevented Brady from winning nine Super Bowls.
Agreed. Maybe let's not let him in as a first ballot. Maybe we can let him in on the back end of that. Fine. Absolutely a good
His
point.
His last year Solid of point. Eligibility, we
right.
put him in.
There you go.
For no other reason than you're the reason why Tom Brady doesn't have nearly as many Super Bowl rings as fingers.
I can get with it.
Okay, something to be said for that. But a guy who's rapidly chasing the legacy of Tom Brady is Patrick Mahomes, who's already got three Super Bowls to his name, three Super Bowl MVPs. He's trying to win his fourth and get his potential fourth Super Bowl MVP, which would be absolutely extraordinary. And, you know, you look at this matchup in Super Bowl 59, there's some fascinating storylines to follow. I mentioned that, you know, what George Karloftis has done. And we've talked about it in depth, right? What has been the biggest conversation over the last 2 weeks in the lead up to this game? What is the biggest thing the Chiefs need to do, according to everybody, in order to win the Super Bowl?
Stop Saquon Barkley.
Now, there are some numbers, I have to say. Now, Saquon is extraordinarily talented. Nobody's arguing that point. Best running back in the NFL this year. There are some numbers, however, that do point to the Chiefs' ability potentially to stop him. I took a look at, you know, Saquon's season, the numbers that he's got, right? Over 1,500 of his rushing yards came against defenses that were 20th or lower in the league. Then I looked at okay, what do the numbers tell us about his performances against top 10 rushing defenses in the NFL? The top 10 rushing defenses in the league, the Baltimore Ravens, who they played once, the Minnesota Vikings and Denver Broncos, second and third, who they didn't play. They played the Buccaneers once. They were fourth in the league. The Lions were fifth. They did not play them. The Steelers, sixth. They played them once. The Green Bay Packers, of which they played twice. The Kansas City Chiefs, who they play on Sunday, eighth in the league. The Dolphins, who were ninth in the league, who they didn't play. And, of course, themselves, the Philadelphia Eagles. So he played five games against top seven rushing defenses in the NFL, Chiefs being number eight. Against the Ravens, who were the best rush defense in football, he had 107 yards rushing in that game. Against the Buccaneers, who were fourth best in the league, he had 84 yards rushing, and they lost that game. Against the Pittsburgh Steelers, he only had 65 rushing yards in that game. And against and two matchups against the Packers, who were the seventh best rush defense in the NFL, he had 119 yards and 109 yards, respectively. That comes out to an average of about 97 rushing yards per game in those five matchups against top 10 rushing defenses in the NFL. Against non-top 10 rushing defenses in the NFL, he was averaging like 130 plus. So the numbers kind of point to top 10 defenses, rushing defenses in the NFL have been able to corral him to some extent. It's insane to say that 100 plus rushing yards in three of those five games is somehow corralling him. But when he's averaging 130 plus against everybody else and you're holding him to 119 or 109 or 107 on an average of about 18 carries, you're doing something in that game. And I pair that with a stat that I saw from Dan Orlovsky today. In their last 18 playoff games, in the Kansas City Chiefs' last 18 playoff appearances, they have not allowed a single 100-yard rusher in any of their last 18 playoff games. That dates back all the way to 2019. Coincides with a certain guy showing up in Kansas. What is
what's his name?
A certain defensive coordinator, I think. Steve Spagnuolo. That's right. Yeah, and okay. I mean, you look at it in nine games this year for Saquon against defenses that ranked 22nd, 25th, 27th, 29th, 30th, 31st, and 32nd against the run. He had 1,500 rushing yards.
So you're saying those may be a little inflated?
They could be a little bit skewed against poor rushing defenses. Okay. He had 1,500 plus yards in nine games against the 10 worst rushing defenses in football. In the other 10 games he averaged 92. So I think for Kansas City, that bodes well. On top of the fact that they're so good at stopping the run, on top of the fact that you've got 2 weeks to prepare, I think the Chiefs can slow down Saquon. You can't stop him, right? He's not going to have 15 carries for 40 yards. I just don't see that happening. He's too talented a player. Although they did do that against Derrick Henry week one, if we all forget. But frankly, I don't know if you have to slow him down to that extent.
No, I think it's more about, you're right, you're not going to stop him. Look, Saquon is a beast. He's going to get his numbers. I mean, that's just, he's going to get his. That, it is what it is. I think it's more about the volume, right? He's going to get probably 100 plus yards, but how many rushes does it take for him to get to that amount? Right? Are we talking 15 or are we talking 20, 25 touches to get to that amount? Because if we're talking 20 plus touches to get 100 plus yards, I think that's the sweet spot where the Chiefs can kind of hold that Philly offense down and kind of do what they need to do. He's going to get his. It's just how is the game going to flow?
So I just look at some of their recent performances against the best running backs in the National Football League, right? Go back to last year's Super Bowl. Super Bowl 58 against the Niners, right? Christian McCaffrey was the best running back in football last year. In that Super Bowl, he had 22 carries for 80 yards. That's less than 4 yards a carry. They absolutely did their job. Now, did Christian McCaffrey kill the Chiefs in the passing game? Absolutely. He had 80 yards on 8 catches and a touchdown. Then, but on the ground, he was not the giant killer we all know him to be. Then you look at how the Chiefs handled Derrick Henry in week one of the regular season. Now, some of that can be a part of, you know, he was still trying to find his way in the system and all those sorts of things. He had 46 yards rushing on 13 carries. That is 3.5 yards per touch. That is what the Chiefs have done in their last two games against the other two guys alongside Saquon that are considered the best running backs in the National Football League. I think they can get it done. And in my view, if it takes the Philadelphia Eagles 20 carries to get Saquon to 100 yards, I think the Chiefs win the football game.
Yeah.
If it takes you 20 carries before he reaches that point, that means that you've been stalled a little bit offensively. That means that Jalen Hurts has had to make some things happen out there on the football field, of which I do not think he's capable, considering the injuries that he's dealt with this year. And for Kansas City, if Saquon has 15 carries for 80 yards, fine. You slow him down enough where he doesn't have 50, 60, 70 rushing yards in the first half, I think you have the lead. And when you put Philadelphia in a position where they're behind, then you put them in a position to consider abandoning the running game. I mean, look at what the Detroit Lions did against the Washington Commanders a couple of weeks ago in that divisional round game. The Lions ran the ball extremely effectively. Jahmyr Gibbs averaged almost 8 yards a carry in that game. He was tremendous. But a couple of ill-advised turnovers by the Lions put Washington out in front. And I think that because of that, the Lions kind of abandoned the running game and tried to throw it all over the yard. It absolutely did not work. I think Philly's going to be a little bit more conscientious of that. They're going to be a little bit more disciplined, and they're just going to abandon Saquon, I don't think. But if you go down 2 scores in the first half, which would be remarkable because the Chiefs typically don't go up 2 scores in the first half of a Super Bowl. They're typically a much better second half team, as we know historically. I don't know, man.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, I think that's one of the keys to success for the Chiefs is just controlling the game. And as much as Philly wants to control the game on their side of the ball, you know, running the ball, keeping Mahomes off the field, as much so the Chiefs want to do the same with keeping Saquon off the field, putting points on the board, and making Philly chase, right? Because their offense all year has run through Saquon Barkley, and it's been very effective. Not so much against some of the better run defenses like the Chiefs. So that's going to be crucial, I think, for success. If the Chiefs, like you said, they typically aren't off to quick starts. If they can do that, though, and they can control the pace of the game and kind of dictate the game plan for Philly and how they approach things offensively, it's a recipe for success.
You make Philly uncomfortable and make them question their running game, you're in a tremendous position to go out and win.
Put some pressure on, yeah, for sure.
I got a couple of other, you know, statistics and storylines that kind of intrigue me for the Chiefs' chances of winning this game, of which I believe they are good. But I got a guy, and we talk a lot, and we've talked a lot about this 7-year run that the Chiefs have been on, and we've given so much credit to so many guys, but I feel like there's an unsung hero in this Chiefs dynasty that maybe doesn't get talked about enough. And I kind of want to mention his name here when we come back and see, get your thoughts on this, Julio, get our listeners' thoughts on it as well. Our number 913-586-7965. Feel free to send us a message on the text line. Again, I think the most unsung hero of the Chiefs dynasty. I'm going to say that name. We'll talk a little bit about him on the other side. This is After Hours with Logan Weber and Julio Sanchez on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan.
We in Chiefs Kingdom constantly throw around names like Brett Veach, Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, Chris Jones as massive contributing factors in this dynasty that has been created in Kansas City, with the Chiefs going to their 5th Super Bowl in 6 years. They've been to 7 straight AFC championship games and are on the precipice of winning their 4th Super Bowl and doing something that's never been done, and that's win 3 Super Bowls back to back to back. But there's some names that I feel like don't get talked about enough in regards to their role in the creation of this dynasty. Right? I mean, Tyrann Mathieu and what he provided kind of laid the groundwork with those early Steve Spagnuolo defenses, helped them win a championship in 2019-2020. I'm looking at an article here from CBS Sports, who decided to rank the 10 most important people in the Chiefs dynasty. I found it fascinating. Number 10 was former Bills GM Doug Whaley, who was, of course, the GM of the Bills back in 2017 when they made that trade from 27 to 10 to take Patrick Mahomes, which kind of set the wheels in motion for this whole thing. So I found that one fascinating. Tyreek Hill is mentioned on this list. And then the guys that I had said, Chris Jones, Steve Spagnuolo's on this list, Travis, Andy, and Patrick Mahomes. But the one name for Chiefs fans that I feel like doesn't get talked about enough, that's former general manager John Dorsey.
All right.
So I know Dorsey was fired in 2017.
Not a popular name here.
I get it. He was fired in 2017, but you look at some of the guys he drafted, right? You can talk about the contracts and some of those things that were
salary cap issues,
highly questionable in a lot of respects, but to say this man hit on a few draft picks is kind of an understatement. So in 2013, right, third round pick out of Cincinnati, they take Travis Kelce. 2016, took a pair of guys. In the second round, they took a defensive lineman out of Mississippi State, otherwise known as Chris Jones. In the fifth round of that draft, they took a little-known wide receiver with some off-field issues, Tyreek Hill. And then in 2017, he trades up from 27 to 10 with the Buffalo Bills, and John Dorsey drafts Patrick Mahomes. Also took Kareem Hunt in that draft as well. So the reason why Patrick Mahomes is in Kansas City can be attributed a great deal to John Dorsey. The reason why Chris Jones is in Kansas City can be attributed a great deal to John Dorsey. Travis Kelce, similar. Now, Andy Reid, of course, played a role in those sorts of things. Matt Nagy was like foaming at the mouth about Patrick Mahomes during the pre-draft process and was adamant with Dorsey about picking him, as was Brett Veach, who was an assistant around the organization at that time. But I feel like John Dorsey deserves a little bit of credit, right? I mean, to bring in the linchpins of this organization, right? He's got to get a great deal of credit. And I am a little bit ignorant to this fact. I believe Dorsey was the one who hired Andy Reid as well to be the head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs.
I wouldn't quite put it that way. I think it was more of an ownership decision. I don't know that it was necessarily run through him, but he was there. He was there.
So I guess it was kind of flipped. So when Andy Reid got hired, he pushed for Dorsey to become the general manager. Yeah. Okay. So I guess to some extent we'll back off of that point, but he's a guy that I don't think gets talked about enough.
He was excellent at drafting players. So no doubt about that. He had his issues with managing the cap. And just when it came to contract time, he wasn't the best. He wasn't the best. And I think he clashed with Andy Reid a lot, too. So there's that.
Yeah. I mean, he's done some good things in his career. He's a pretty impressive executive. I mean, he spent time with the Green Bay Packers. He was another guy that kind of falls off the Holmgren tree a little bit.
Yeah.
Started out as a scout for the Packers and after playing for the Packers, and then went to the Seahawks when Holmgren left and went there. Then he came back. Yeah, somebody said you forgot Marcus Peters. Yeah, he also drafted Marcus Peters, who was a great player. Had his issues as well, right? He was kind of a hothead. He took chances a lot. He was an absolute ball hawk, right? I mean, he was going to get burnt a couple times a game, but he was also,
you hated him here.
He could walk away with an interception because he always got aggressive on routes. He bit early. He tried to undercut routes and take away the ball. It was what it was, right? You either loved him or you hated him. Somebody said, don't forget Dan Sorensen. Hey, man.
Hey, he was a staple around here.
Man, he made three or four really bad plays a game, but then would do something otherworldly once a game, and you're like, oh, he was so frustrating at so many different points. But I don't know. I just feel
you're right. And while it didn't end well, I think at the time he was the guy to hire. I mean, it was a no-brainer, home run hit. He was the guy to hire. the hottest executive in the name in all NFL circles. He was like the guy to hire. So, I mean, it was not a mistake, and he was good at his job for the most part.
He laid the foundation for this whole thing that allowed for pillars like Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and Chris Jones to arrive. You know, drafted Tyreek Hill, which led to a Super Bowl, which then led to a trade that ultimately got the Chiefs Trent McDuffie, and that was a huge linchpin for everything. He did a lot in regards to being able to bring things into perspective for Kansas City and start this dynastic run. So I felt like it was kind of worthwhile to mention John Dorsey, who, I mean, is a part of this dynasty in some respect, shape, or form, right? He's not going to earn a Super Bowl ring by any stretch of the imagination, but big part of why we are where we are today in Chiefs Kingdom. Talking about, you know, this Super Bowl, I find it, you know, fascinating, and I'm talking about a general manager and John Dorsey and how important general managers can be for a team, how important the draft can be for a team. We pay a lot of attention to free agency and trades and all those things, but the best teams in football, year after year after year, are the teams who have a proven track record of hitting in the draft. And this graphic from the NFL on Fox really puts that into perspective. So it's a graphic of the offensive starters that are listed for this game. Right, the 11 starters on offense for Kansas City, the 11 on defense for or on offense for the Eagles. Of the 22 guys that are on this list, 14 of them were drafted by these teams. 7 of the Chiefs' 11 starters offensively were drafted by their organization. 7 also on the other side for the Philadelphia Eagles, right? For the Chiefs, Mahomes, Pacheco, Xavier Worthy, Travis Kelce, Mike Caliendo, Creed Humphrey, Trey Smith. The 4 guys that weren't drafted by them, DeAndre Hopkins, Hollywood Brown, Joe Tooney, and Juwan Taylor. That's pretty impressive in and of itself. Now, and you think about the fact that if Rashee Rice wasn't hurt, then likely Hollywood Brown is off of this list and Rashee Rice is on the list. So then it's 8 of your 11 starters, which is, I mean, wildly impressive. And then for the Eagles, Jalen Hurts, Devonta Smith, Dallas Goedert, Jordan Mailata, Landon Dickerson, Cam Jurgens, and Lane Johnson. All drafted by the Philadelphia Eagles, the 4 guys that weren't, Mekhi Becton, who they traded for with the Jets, Jahan Dotson, A.J. Brown, and Saquon Barkley. The teams that are the best are the ones that draft the best, and this graphic proves that to the nth degree. A lot more to get to in terms of this Super Bowl. A few more numbers that I want to dissect here, including maybe the biggest reason why the Chiefs have been such an incredible team over the Mahomes era, and especially over the course of the last 3 years. This one stat, I think, puts into perspective just how special the Chiefs' offense has been, and specifically just how special Patrick Mahomes is. I'll reveal that stat on the other side here. You're listening to After Hours. Logan Weber joined by Julio Sanchez on your home for Kansas City sports. It's 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan.
Hey, y'all. Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.
I must say, Julio, we're kind of nailing these NFL honors so far tonight.
What do we got now? Updates?
Yes, we have updates. Via at the NFL on Twitter. I'm not calling it X. It will not happen till the end of time.
Agreed.
Sorry.
Don't be.
The Offensive Rookie of the Year confirmed it's Jaden Daniels. We already knew that. The Defensive Player of the Year in the NFL, Pat Surtain, the second, which we had predicted. The Offensive Player of the Year, to the surprise of nobody, Saquon Barkley, which we had predicted. And the Comeback Player of the Year is Joe Burrow. It's Joe Burrow. We said it was going to be Joe Burrow. We both kind of hoped that it would be Sam Darnold, but it wasn't. it's become such an injury predicated sort of award, or you're an out of the league sort of guy, which I get, right? I mean, that's a part of a comeback, but Sam Darnold was almost out of the league. Like, he was backing up Bryce Young in the Carolina Panthers.
Don't think it was deserved on Joe Burrow's part, but that's just my opinion.
I don't disagree with you in that sentiment. After hours here on 96.5, the Fan, Logan Weber, joined by Julio Sanchez. And I mentioned there's a certain stat that I think really puts into perspective why the Kansas City Chiefs offensively have been so unbelievably special during Patrick Mahomes' run as the starting quarterback, and especially over the last 3 years, right? During the course of this three-peat dating back to the 2022-23 season. And it is third down efficiency. Specifically, Patrick Mahomes' third and fourth down efficiency. So I got this from Pro Football Focus, which is not always the greatest source of news. Their grades can be
a source of reference.
They're questionable in some respects, but these numbers are insanity. So Patrick Mahomes, these are his numbers on third and fourth downs since the start of the 2022-23 season. His Pro Football Focus grade is a 94.4. That's out of 100, which is first in the NFL. He's got 46 passing touchdowns on third and fourth down, first in the NFL. He's thrown for 301 first downs since 2022. That's first in the NFL. And he has 344 total first downs. That includes his ability to extend with his feet and make plays on the ground to get a first down. 344 of them since the start of two seasons ago, 2022-23. That is also first in the NFL. You want to know why the Chiefs are so hard to beat? It's because they're impossible to get off the field offensively. And they're impossible to get off the field offensively because Patrick Mahomes is so unbelievably special in the biggest moments of the game when it matters the absolute most. Simple as that. It is as simple as that. I mean, Mahomes is unbelievable on third down and fourth down, for that matter.
Not much to add to that. I mean, that just kind of...
Yeah, those numbers...
That is what it is, man. He's special.
Those numbers are absolutely otherworldly during the course of his career. I mean, it's so incredibly difficult to keep an offense, to rid an offense of momentum when you can't keep them off can't get them off the field. And in the second half of games, in third and fourth down in those sorts of games, it's incredibly tough. You know, we were talking earlier about Saquon Barkley, right? And I mentioned some numbers that, you know, against top 10 rushing defenses this year, he hasn't been as successful as he has against bottom 10 rushing defenses in the NFL, which is no surprise to anybody. But the numbers are a little bit staggering. The fact that the Chiefs haven't allowed a 100-yard rusher in a playoff game in 18 straight. And I look at another guy with some very intriguing numbers and a guy who's going to play a massive role in this game on Sunday. That's Nick Bolton, right? Nick Bolton's going to be a free agent at the end of this year, and he is a hot-button issue. Some Chiefs fans love him. Some Chiefs fans hate him. He's not the best in pass coverage, but he is a sure and reliable tackler, and he's an incredibly intelligent player at middle linebacker. Steve Spagnuolo loves having him at middle backer. I think that those two are kind of along the same wavelength in terms of their football mindset and their preparation. And here's a stat that I find incredible in regards to Nick Bolton. Because like I said, no, he's not a pass coverage guy. He's a middle linebacker. He's there to tackle. He's there to fill gaps. And he does that as good as anybody has done in their first four seasons in the NFL. So here's a stat. Since 2000, there are only a handful of players, five to be exact, a literal handful of players, to have 550 or more tackles and 35 or more TFLs in their first 4 years in the league since 2000. One of those is a guy who, in our view, Julio, will be a first ballot Hall of Famer tonight. That's Luke Kuechly, who in those four seasons was a three-time All-Pro and a three-time Pro Bowler. Patrick Willis put up those numbers in his first 4 years. Three All-Pros, four Pro Bowls. Navarro Bowman, three All-Pros, four Pro Bowls. Lavonte David, who was a one-time All-Pro and a one-time Pro Bowler, and Nick Bolton. Those are the five who in the first 4 years of their careers had at least 550 tackles and at least 35 tackles for loss. Nick Bolton has never been selected All-Pro or a Pro Bowler.
It's good company to keep.
That is elite company.
That's elite company. That's correct.
And I know it's hard to distinguish in this day and age because it's such a pass-happy league, and you need linebackers that can cover. And I feel like he was sort of covered by those issues when Willie Gay was in Kansas City because he was such a good pass coverage linebacker. I think that Drew Tranquil is solid in pass coverage, but he and Leo Chenal are not pass coverage guys. They are brute strength, getting downhill, filling gaps, and stuffing the run sort of guys. But for him in his first 4 years in this league to have 550 or more tackles and 35 or more TFLs is extraordinary. And the fact that he's never made a Pro Bowl is tough. Like, all pro is one thing, but to never make a Pro Bowl, especially that year he had, maybe was it two seasons ago, where he led the NFL in tackles. He had like 180 or something ridiculous, and he didn't get in. Just boggles my mind.
Well, and let's not forget there's some injuries thrown in there. So it's not like he's played, you know, a full slate of a full season, you know, since he's come into the league. There's been some injury concerns there.
No question about it. I mean, played in 8 games last year in 2023 because of the hand injury or wrist injury. He only started 12 games as a rookie, but in the regular season in 4 years, he's got 458 career tackles. And he's got 93 career tackles in the postseason. He's been an absolute dog for this Chiefs team. And if he walks this offseason, then so be it. I think that we should be a little bit disappointed in that fact if we're Chiefs fans. I know that it's a hard position to play as the middle linebacker. You are you orchestrate the defense, right? You are the coach on the field for your guys. And while Chris Jones is considered the leader of that defense, which he is by all intents and purposes, I won't argue that point. Nick Bolton is the guy directing traffic. He's the one here's what we're running on this play. He's the one making checks. He's the one reading and diagnosing the offense pre-snap and making things happen and making switches and changes. He's been special in that role, and Steve Spagnuolo absolutely loves him. And who are we to argue with the thought process of one Steve Spagnuolo? Because obviously that guy is a defensive Rembrandt.
Future Hall of Famer.
Should be.
First assistant coach to be a Hall of Famer.
Absolutely should be. And if they win on Sunday, it shouldn't be a question in the minds of anyone.
It already shouldn't be, but this absolutely will solidify that.
I mean, if he gets his fifth Super Bowl as a defensive coordinator, how are we going to argue that ever again? I mean, he's got more Super Bowls as a defensive coordinator than some head coaches in the Hall of Fame have. And especially in the system that he's in, because like Tom Coughlin was an offensive-minded guy. Andy Reid is absolutely an offensive-minded coach. So the defense is pretty much his and his alone. I mean, it's his baby. He's not having to really answer to the head coach in many respects with regards to the defense because Andy has his mindset so focused on the offensive side of the football. So I think that he should absolutely be a Hall of Famer, and a win on Sunday would do nothing more than put the final stamp on it for his career. A lot more news that we want to get to here. We've got about 10 minutes left in the show. A massive rival of the Kansas City Chiefs is actually predicting that the Chiefs are going to win the Super Bowl on Sunday, even though his teammate despises the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll talk about that on the other side of this break. This is After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. You're listening to Logan Weber and Julio Sanchez here on your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
It's been well documented that Ja'Marr Chase is maybe the biggest Chiefs hater in existence.
True. This is true.
But interestingly enough, he's got a teammate who actually, earlier today, predicted that Kansas City would win the Super Bowl. I mentioned earlier in the show that Joe Burrow, was on the breakfast ball with Craig Carton and Mark Schlereth and our boy Danny Perkins. And he was asked, you know, for a prediction on the Super Bowl. And he said that he hasn't seen anybody run the ball effectively against the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, and that he's actually predicting that the Chiefs are going to win Super Bowl 59. Now, I don't really know how to take that, because, like, is he being genuine? Is it a thought of reverse psychology? Because so many people are picking against the Chiefs just because they don't like the Chiefs, right? Ja'Marr Chase doesn't want to talk about the Chiefs, and during the NFL's top 100, like, he won't even say Mahomes' name, and I find it kind of fascinating. But Joe Burrow predicting Kansas City's going to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, who'd have thought? I mean, I guess I'll take it. You know, maybe he's approaching it as more of a from a competitive standpoint. You know, you want to beat the champion. Next year they'll get another shot. You know, you don't want the runner up. You want to beat the champion. So.
Yeah, he was also asked about the conspiracy that the Chiefs are, you know, being pressed upon everybody by the NFL and the officiating, and blah blah blah, yeah, blah. And he goes, and he simply said, I don't buy into that. He said, you know, great teams use those to their advantage. Calls are going to go against you. 50-50 calls, coin flip calls, they're going to go against you in a game. But what makes the special team special is that they can use those to their advantage and be successful beyond that, right? They can take those calls that go their way and make something out of it. They can take those calls that don't go their way and it doesn't, they don't allow it to affect them, or they don't allow it to snowball. They just get ready for the next play. And that's the Chiefs. When calls don't go the Chiefs' way, we don't sit and talk and fret over them for weeks at a time, because the Chiefs flush it and they move on to the next thing. And their opponents don't make the Chiefs pay when those things occur, at least not nearly as frequently as what happens when the Kansas City Chiefs have a call that goes their way. They make the opponent pay, and the opponent can't seem to keep them off the field. I had somebody here say, how many first downs did the Chiefs generate off of penalties? I found the numbers. According to some statistics that I found here, the Chiefs this season in 2024 had 25 penalties that resulted in first downs for them offensively. That's 20th in the National Football League. For reference, the Buffalo Bills had the second most penalties result in first downs this year. 39.
You don't got to pile on to the Bills fans. Shout out to my friend Kathy, you know.
Vikings were first in the league with 43 first downs off of penalties. The Steelers had 38 first downs off of penalties. The Cowboys had 37. The Bengals had 35 first downs off of penalties this year. Commanders, Buccaneers, Dolphins, Titans, Rams, Ravens, Packers, Seahawks, Chargers, Jets all had 30 or more first downs due to penalties. Chiefs had 25. So the numbers don't really back you up on that one all that much. An 816 in the text line says, Mark Schlereth and Craig Carton on the same show. What a pile of ignorance. And I've said this before. Carton is just, he's a shock jockey.
Why is he on, how is he on TV still?
Craig, you know? Carton is, he's the same umbrella as Skip. Yeah. And you know, Mad Dog Russo and Stephen A. Smith to a certain extent.
He has such a punchable face, too.
His
voice, and he just has a punchable face.
But he just comes out with outrageous hot takes for the sake of outrageous hot takes, because he wants to get clipped on social media, and that's what national sports media coverage has become, it seems like, nowadays. People just want to be on there for the clip. They want to get clipped. They want to say something outrageous so that it can end up on Twitter and TikTok and all the things, and people can debate and rage in the comments over it. Mark Schlereth, I'll defend Mark Schlereth to some degree.
I'm not, yeah, he doesn't bother me at all.
He's a Chiefs hater because he's a certified, legitimate Chiefs hater. He played for the Denver Broncos, okay? Yeah. I will respect him to that degree. Craig Carton has no reason to hate the Kansas City Chiefs other than the fact that that's a popular thing to do in social media nowadays.
Yep.
That's all it is. Mark Schlereth had battles against the Kansas City Chiefs for years as a member of the Denver Broncos. He has said time and time again that the toughest place to come and play in the National Football League is Arrowhead Stadium. He truly dislikes the Chiefs because he dislikes the Chiefs, not just because everybody else does, right? And I respect him to that extent. Do I like him? No, because he hates the Chiefs. But I'll respect his hatred because it's well-founded. It's not just some social media ploy to try to generate himself more popularity, because that seems to be the cool thing to do in the NFL now, is hate the Kansas City Chiefs because they win all the time. He hated the Chiefs 25 years ago when it wasn't cool, when we sucked, all right? So I give him a lot of respect for that. That's kind of the end of it here. So I'm watching the NFL honors here on my screen. They're about ready to announce the NFL's Defensive Rookie of the Year. We are of the belief that Jared Verse is likely going to win that award. I don't think that should be any surprise to anybody. So far, we're hitting on them, I have to say. We've done a great job so far. Yes, and it's Jared Verse. Jared Verse is the NFL's Defensive Rookie of the Year. So far, we're perfect. We nailed Assistant Coach of the Year, Comeback Player of the Year, Offensive Player of the Year. We nailed Defensive Player of the Year. Yeah. I guess so. Maybe we should have gotten online and put some money down on some of these things. The question that's going to surround everybody is who was in when the MVP and who's getting into the Hall of Fame. Is Eli Manning a first ballot Hall of Famer? It's a conscientious subject. Or a contentious subject, I should say.
Go Josh Allen.
I think it's going to be Lamar.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't want
I
it
know.
To be Lamar.
I know.
But it's going to be, I think. And Eli Manning's probably going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, much to the chagrin of the two of us on this show. This has been After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Appreciate you guys listening. I'm Logan Weber for Julio Sanchez. We'll be back tomorrow from 6 to 9 right here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. I don't know where I'm going, I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan. From the trusted team behind 48 Hours, welcome to Case by Case, your weekly update on the biggest true crime stories unfolding right now. Nick Reiner remains in custody without bail. Luigi Mangione accused of stalking and gunning down UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson. From high-profile trials and stunning evidence to major breaks in cold cases, we'll follow it all case by case. Follow and listen to 48 Hours Case by Case wherever you get your podcasts.